Hello and a warm welcome to another edition of The Debate on Press TV. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Welcome to the show. Now, the United Nations Special Envoy for Yemen is in Sana'a for talks with Ansarullah officials ahead of UN-sponsored talks in Sweden later this week. The talks seek to end the nearly four-year Saudi-led brutal war on the Arab country, with the UN warning that Yemen is facing the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Now, more than 22 million people, three-quarters of the population, are in need of humanitarian aid and protection, while 8.4 million of these people do not know how they will obtain their next meal. Now, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has acknowledged the humanitarian crisis in Yemen. However, he said that Washington will keep supporting Saudi Arabia in its brutal war in Yemen, casting a serious doubt over the U.S. sincerity in ending the war. Now, can UN-mediated efforts bring peace to the war-torn Yemen and stop the unfolding humanitarian catastrophe there? To begin discussing this issue, we'll first go to Sana'a, the Yemeni's capital, and get an update from Press TV correspondent there, Mohammed Al-Attab. Mohammed, over to you.
Yes. Regarding the arrival of the United Nations envoy, it's somehow ensuring to Yemeni people, but previous setbacks by the United Nations to make a success and bringing to the negotiating table political factions and also forcing an end to the Saudi war on the country. But the recent move by the United Nations envoy, when he was able to convince Riyadh to allow United Nations chartered plane to take the Ansarullah forces, the injured forces from the Sana'a to Muscat, is a step closer to build the trust between both sides and also to prepare for other steps, and most importantly, the left of Saudi ban on the Sana'a International Airport. As there are many people who are in need to travel abroad Yemen to receive treatment, as you know that most of the country's healthcare facilities have been bombed, and also due to the Saudi ban and siege on the Hudaydah seaport, this has affected the supply of life-saving medicines to the country, and also the operation of such health facilities. Also, the regarding the humanitarian aspect, we are talking about, as you mentioned, three quarters of the population are now in need of foreign aid due to the ban on the of the flow of humanitarian aid, and also the commercial commodities into the country. This have affected the daily life of Yemenis. Also, the non-payment of public salaries for employees of the government. This has also impacted their daily life. That the many of them, they are around 2 million people who are serving at the public sector. They have been without monthly salaries for over 2 years after the transfer of the central bank to Aden and under the command of the former president Abdul Mansour Hadi's government. This has also affected the population in the country. Hopefully, with the arrival of the United Nations envoy and also his assurances that he will give to the Yemeni delegation who are expected to take to participate in the Sweden peace talks this week. It's important that they will give them these assurances in order to prepare for tangible meetings between the both political factions, and also for those who will take part in the next negotiations. These should also carry the responsibility and also mm-hmm. the suffering of Yemenis on their shoulders to reach an agreement okay. and end nearly 4 years of Saudi Arabia's death and destruction of the country.
Okay, with that update from our correspondent Mohammed Al-Attab from Sana'a, Yemen, let me introduce our guests who are joining us in this debate today. We'll have journalist and political commentator Richard Millett from London, and also we'll have senior researcher with Al Bayan Center for Planning and Studies, Catherine Schechtem, is also joining us from London. Now, thank you for being us on this show. Now, let me begin with Richard. UN envoy for Yemen, Martin Griffiths, says that he's hopeful that he could hold peace talks in Sweden this week. Now, Ansarullah is saying that they are ready to go to Sweden if their safe passage is guaranteed and there are positive indications of priority for peace. Of course, you know, trust between the two sides are in short supply. Now, can we expect talks to resume this time around, unlike the other failed rounds in the past?
Well, we're going to have to see what's going to happen. It's going to be very, very tricky because, as you say, there's no trust. But this flying out the injured, this is, you know, this is a possible breakthrough, which we haven't seen since 2015, the flying out of the 50 injured Houthis, and Saudi Arabia agreeing to that, is something that we haven't seen. And it indicates that Saudi Arabia, especially after what's been going on internally in Saudi Arabia, the pressure on Donald Trump in relation to defending Saudi Arabia, I mean, the politics of all this, death and destruction is taking place in Yemen, but in a way, as tragic and as Khashoggi murder was, it shouldn't have taken place, obviously. It's horrific, but if there's anything that might come out of it, of this horrific murder, might just be because of all the pressure that's being piled on Saudi Arabia because of it. You never know. You never know. It might be the saving of millions of Yemeni lives.
All right, Catherine, what do you think? Do you think that these talks will be held soon in Sweden?
Possibly, and I'm going to say this because I think of the timing, and as you guys mentioned, the fact that there's extreme political pressure upon, you know, upon Riyadh right now because of the Khashoggi scandal. But you know, it all depends, because I think the Saudi are reaching out now to Yemen resistance movement only because I think they have realized that they have lost this war. They have lost it a long time ago, but now they're trying to save face, and I think to try to minimize the political, you know, potential fallout that it will have should they lose completely and altogether. And I think that they're facing this very reality where the international community is not willing to stomach any more deaths in Yemen. Everyone is waking up to the fact that, you know, if there is a humanitarian, you know, catastrophe in Yemen to begin with, it's because of Saudi Arabia. It architected this humanitarian catastrophe. It's not because of the war per se, it's because the Saudi made it so. And I think that we need to remember this. So it's, you know, I think it's a positive step forward. I'm very cautious because I don't think that the Saudi are willing just yet to admit that they entered this war with, you know, under false pretenses and that they had no business whatsoever to actually intervene in Yemen in the first place, and that they have completely failed at achieving whatever goals they had. So it's going to be very difficult, I think, for them to swallow that pill. But then again, they might not have a choice anyway. So it's really a matter of political pragmatism and whether Riyadh will be willing to admit defeat and admit it very publicly.
Okay, Richard, the United States has only given lip service to the resolution of the Yemen conflict. No serious mission of Yemen or any action was discussed, for example, in the recent G20 summit that was held. President Trump has not agreed to stop arms sales to Saudi Arabia, which is now blamed by many countries and bodies for the crimes being committed in Yemen. What's the U.S. agenda for Yemen?
It's the U.K. also. Obviously, there's huge industry supplying arms, the United Kingdom as well. I think the approach is to continue to supply arms, but to make sure that they're used far more sparingly and far more defensively. Saudi Arabia has got a case to defend itself against Iranian aggression. It's the Catherine is wrong to an extent. It was the Iranian support for the Houthis that drove out to President Hadi, and you know, Saudi Arabia, it reacted incorrectly, but there was concern of attacks, as we've seen, on Saudi Arabia from Yemen, supported by Iran. And understandably, Saudi Arabia cannot stomach Iran having free hits at Saudi Arabia. Okay. But there has to be talks on the side, continuation of weapons supplies, But I think that Theresa May and Donald Trump have now, after what happened in the embassy, the death of Khashoggi, I think they can now twist Saudi Arabia's arm to say, look, stop now, only use defensively, but this war has got to come to an end.
Okay, Catherine doesn't seem to agree with you. She's going to attack you now. Catherine, go ahead.
Yes, I do. I profoundly disagree. I mean, you know, this whole narrative that Iran did it to begin with, I'm personally actually sick of it. I mean, enough already. I mean, the reason why, you know, Saudi Arabia attacked Yemen is because Yemen was actually becoming a pluralist democracy at that, and that it didn't fit within its own narrative and the kind of reality that it wanted to see in the Middle East is very simple. The reason why it attacked Yemen is because the Muslim Brotherhood that it did found and did train for many decades completely failed and was actually, you know, the most of Yemeni revolted against the Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Islam Party because they did not agree with the kind of oppression that they were, you know, manufacturing in Yemen, and they did not agree with having Al-Qaeda militants walking around their country willy-nilly killing people and beheading them like they do in Saudi Arabia, like they did in Iraq, and like they continue to do in Syria because Saudi Arabia is funding and training them. So it's that simple. It has nothing to do with sectarianism per se, because, you know, the Houthi, yes, are Shia, you know, by, you know, religiously speaking, but it doesn't mean that they are, because they're Shia, they are automatically in alliance with Iran, and it doesn't mean that Iran has any interest in you know, aiding the Houthi either, just because of their religion. That would be ridiculous. I mean, people do not conduct, you know, their policy based on religion. I mean, they might have done at the time of the crusade, but this is not the crusade
and
anymore.
And also, there has been no evidence supporting that.
Iran, if I can just say, there is no proof whatsoever that Iran helped anybody. And if there were any proof, I can guarantee that everybody would be trumpeting them at the UN, and they're not, because there are no proof. You know, those are just, you know, allegations that have been trumped around again by think tanks and journalists and media, just because they wanted to have a rationale to follow to be able to justify the murdering of Yemenis and say, oh, because they are Shia, because, you know, Iran is somehow involved, then we must kill everybody. I mean, enough with the fallacy, enough with the lies. I mean, Saudi Arabia attacked Yemen because it could. And, you know, Washington and London were quite happy to sell weapons to the Saudi while they were doing it, because it meant making more money. But by the way, should they stop selling weapons to Saudi Arabia, it would not dent the economy, not one bit. You know, this is, again, a fallacy that is being passed around to terrify the population. That's not true. Economically speaking, it's simply not true. However, that would mean that the elites that happen to be lobbying for more wars and actually, you know, weapon manufacturer would lose a lot of money, however. The people in Britain and in America would not, you know, feel any difference whatsoever. They might actually have a bit more standing, you know, internationally speaking, because they would go back to having some principles and actually abide by humanitarian law. But that's another story altogether. But no, enough with Iran, enough with the sectarianism, you know, fallacy that you keep, you know, spinning around. Nobody's actually buying it, certainly not the Yemeni.
All right, Richard, the plight of the Yemenis came to the fore after the fury, you know, over the Saudi murder of the U.S.-based journalist Jamal Khashoggi. You also mentioned that. In which case, President Trump even astute by MBS, who is thought to have ordered the murder. Now, the good thing was at least that the world started to notice and to see the horrible situation, that there is a country on planet Earth called Yemen, and there is this horrible situation there after nearly 4 years of that bloody war there. Let's have your thoughts on that.
Well, it's shocking. I agree. There are issues, unfortunately, that take up 95% of the UN, you know, United Nations time, Human Rights Councils, resolutions that are passed. One country, the United Nations, is repeatedly taken to task, and it has done nothing wrong, and that's Israel. And because of this fascination and focus and concentration on the Palestinians, and I've just come back from that area, and it's not what the media in this country makes it all out to be, because of the focus on the Palestinian-Israeli issue, which is a microcosm of, it's a tiny problem in the Middle East, but it's blown out of all proportion by the media, by the United Nations.
Tiny problem, Richard, what are you talking about? 70 years of living under occupation and all those problems, you call this tiny problem?
It's a tiny microcosm. If you look at the amount of deaths between, if you look at the amount of deaths between the Israelis and the Palestinians, it's actually tiny. And you compare it to what's happened in Yemen, the whole world has been focusing on this relatively, I'm not saying it's a small issue, but a relatively tiny issue, the Israeli and the Palestinian. And because of this focus out of proportion, because Israel's a Jewish state, you know who suffers? The Yemenis. This is the problem. It's a sick world when the United Nations condemns Israel 99% of the time in the General Assembly and on the Human Rights Council, and there is absolutely no care. And it's actually quite sad, you know, this United Nations envoy finally turns up in Yemen. Fine, 3 or 4 years too late, because they concentrate on the wrong issue time after time. But the thesis of your question, I absolutely 100% agree with you.
Okay, let's go to Catherine. Catherine looks very surprised.
I don't even know what to say to this. I mean, you know, the so
talk about that tiny issue.
We're blaming the international community apathy and the UN on Palestinians. Now, I mean, this is insanity. I mean, you managed to blame Palestinians for the genocide that is happening in Yemen somehow. It's their fault because they exist. I mean, it's beyond me. And blaming Israel, of course, blaming Israel. Why would not the UN needs to blame Israel, because Israel is systematically, on all accounts, violating humanitarian rights, humanitarian law, human rights, and international law on a daily basis. So it's not like it's happening sometime. It's happening every single day by the existence of the illegal settlement, you know, on its own. Now, when it comes to Saudi Arabia, you know, the Saudi have a very powerful lobby. So, of course, the United Nations says nothing. It does nothing. Same thing goes for Israel, by the way, because the Saudi have actually mapped out the entire architecture of the narrative on that of Israel, and they have learned a great deal in terms of, you know, buying out silences. And it seems to be working out. I mean, if you recall, Ban Ki-moon made a very public statement saying that the reason why he had to actually remove the Saudi from the blacklist and the Human Rights Council was because the Saudi threatened to withdraw funds. So it wasn't because they were a mistake. You know, they deserve to be on that list, but it's because they had so much power in terms of money to throw around at officials that nobody dared say anything. And the same thing goes for Israel. I mean, Israel has very powerful friends, and America is always, you know, wielding a veto. So the UN is literally, you know, cannot do anything other than just grandstand and
it's only blaming
kind of
like no
murmurs.
Action.
Yes.
That's right. Okay,
exactly.
Let's come back to the main topic. Richard, Martin Griffiths is now in Yemen. He's saying that he's going to make arrangements for the Sweden talks to be held soon. Can we hope that this round of peace talks, could we expect an end to the Yemen war? What can make these talks a success?
Saudi Arabia and Iran coming to some sort of peace agreement.
Saudi Arabia and Iran?
Yeah, because, you know, Iran has, you know, despite what Catherine says, I disagree with her.
Okay, so then tell me where Iranian troops are in Yemen. I dare you, because there are American troops, we have UK troops, we have Saudi troops, we have all kinds of troops. Show me where the Iranians are. If you can show me one Iranian, then we can have that discussion, but stop with Iran. It's ridiculous. We don't blame, you know, a global warming on Iran for UK. I mean, it's incredible. Every role since the Little Tehran those days, you know, from global warming to the war in Yemen to maybe the murder of Khashoggi. I mean, you know, the issue was actually raised by Saudi Arabia, saying that, oh, the Iranian did it. I would like to know how. I mean, is there anything else? Maybe the unrest in France, you know, maybe Iranians did it. They did it. Of course they did it, because, you know, they have telepathic power, and they're encouraging people to rise up against oppression.
Nice answer. Iran totally controls Lebanon. Iran totally controls...
I'm talking about Yemen.
We're talking about Yemen, Richard.
So please tell me where Iranian troops are based in Yemen, because you think they're supporting the Houthi. Explain to me how. I'll tell you something else. When Iran gets involved in Iraq, what happened? Daesh run away. When Iran gets involved in Syria, what happened? Daesh run away. So far, the Yemeni have failed to completely kick the Saudi out of their land. That means that Iran didn't get involved.
Exactly. And Iran went to Iraq to fight Daesh on the request of the Iraqi government, and went to Syria on the request of the Damascus government.
Iran doesn't hide its military presence. It actually abides by international law and acts upon invitation. Unlike America,
okay.
By the way.
Of course, Iran has had its own proposal. There's a four-point plan it offered a few years ago. Mr. Zarif is saying that it is still viable. Now, Richard, do you think the Saudi Arabia has the potential, this political will, actually, to make necessary concessions after nearly 4 years of war?
Well, as I've said, you know, Iran is supplying the Houthis. It's advising the Houthis. It's directing the Houthis.
I'm asking about Saudi Arabia, Richard. Iran has a plan, and it's not interfering. It just proposes a plan. Now, what about Saudi Arabia?
Iran is all over. Iran is destabilizing the whole of the Middle East, as is Saudi Arabia. This is my point.
Absolutely.
The only way that you cannot just look at
now, London and take over. Why not?
You can't just blame one side. You've got to look at the whole picture. You can't just look at what Saudi Arabia is fighting. It's done terrible things in Yemen, but the whole picture is Saudi Arabia and Iran. The reason everyone's dying like this and there's so much suffering in the Middle East is because of this tension, continued tension between Saudi Arabia and Iran. And until
did Iran chose to impose a humanitarian blockade on Yemen? I'm sorry, did Iran chose to bomb away at hospitals and cemeteries and funerals and warehouses and civilian infrastructures and civilians? Did their school lost? Did they?
Iran.
I'm sorry, but did Iran fire one missile, one bullet? Did they send one soldier upon Yemeni soil? I don't think so. Who shot the first shot? That was Saudi Arabia. It was a unilaterally declared war upon Yemen. Yemen are resisting.
Catherine, let Richard answer. We are running out of time. Richard, 30 seconds. Go ahead.
I mean, you've got to answer where are the Houthis getting all of their weapons and all their advice, the fact that they're able to fight.
I can answer this. President Ali Abdullah Saleh has, like, beautifully stored weapons given to him by the American and the British. So there you go. I just answered your question. Not Iran.
All right.
Not Iran whatsoever. The Americans.
Okay, final thoughts. 20 seconds each person. Richard?
Well, as I've been saying, Saudi and Iran, you've got to look at the big picture, whether it's with the Palestinians and Israelis, you've got to look at the big picture. You can't just say one side's to blame. We've got the whole of the region has somehow got there's such a terrible things going on in the region.
Okay. Catherine?
The biggest powers.
I'm just going to say that whoever tries to actually justify the existence of Saudi Arabia has actually lost the conversation, because all they can do is deflect blame onto Iran, because they have no ground to stand on, so all they do is deflecting. And I think that, you know, this debate proved once again that, you know, Saudi Arabia has very poor people to defend it.
All right. And that's it for this edition of The Debate. I should thank our guest journalist and political commentator, Richard Millett from London, and senior researcher with Al-Bayan Center for Planning and Studies, Catherine Shakhtam, also from London. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for watching This Debate. We'll see you next time.